From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm American Ninja Warrior Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Now, we here at NPR have a dirty little secret, and that is our audience is old.
I would say delightfully mature.
At any rate, it is a problem because our listeners, well, eventually they disappear.
They go to live on grandma's farm out in the country.
So the problem is we have to recruit the young. That's what we're going to do today. All of our interviews today are intended to appeal to young people.
We start with Daniel Radcliffe. The young actor joined us in 2014.
Thank you very much.
Not to beat around the bush any further, Dan, you of course starred as Harry Potter in all the movies. And
yes. We
watched so many of them with my children, it felt like you were also a member of the family.
Yeah.
Albeit a more obedient and cheerful one.
And magical.
And magical. So, but I sat down this week and I watched your new movie, Horns, and I didn't have a timer, but it seemed in the first 5 minutes you smoked, drank, swore like a sailor. I believe you urinated on a religious shrine and generally behaved very badly. And I want to ask you, how good did that feel?
It was pretty great. I mean, not necessarily urinating on a religious shrine.
No, of course not.
That's not something that I've, like, longed to do for ages. But it's nice to play a part that is so different. And I get, like, he's kind of a badass in this film.
You do, in fact, grow horns.
Yes.
Which is a look.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of the people out there who always thought Harry Potter was satanic are going, aha, I told you.
Yeah, I know, but I sort of enjoy annoying those people. I mean, we all work with
me. There are so many things to ask you about as the star of the most profitable and probably most widely seen film series of all time. But let's just start with the action figures and toys. If I were to go to your house, would I see any Harry Potter memorabilia, any little Daniel Radcliffe's and your friends?
No, you'd see, what have I got? You know what you're more likely to find is like sort of homemade Harry Potter dolls that I get sort of given, or not by me, I hate them.
that would be hilarious if you sat around all day.
Yeah, that's what I've been spending my time with.
Yes.
Filming. I've just been making dolls. There's a few of those, but not too many action figures.
I did want to ask you, I mean, again, a lot of questions, but as I explained earlier, my daughters grew up with you, as so many people did. And it must be odd. I mean, it's one thing to be well-known as an actor, which obviously you are. It's another thing to be a part of so many people's childhood. Does that ever get, like, oppressive or strange?
No, not really. I mean, it's actually rather lovely. I'm very lucky to be associated with something that, for the most part, is really well-loved. I mean, some people are famous for being part of stuff that people hate. I remember I was standing behind, like, a British reality TV star a few years ago at a concert, and, like, the jit he was getting from the crowd around him was incredible. I was just remember thinking, geez, I'm lucky everyone like really likes the thing I got famous for. You know, and it's still incredibly lovely to have people come up to you and say, you know, you're a huge part of my childhood. Because I had a great time too. That's the thing. Like, if I had a horrible time, I'm sure I wouldn't want to be reminded of it.
Right.
But because I had a really good time, it's always really nice.
It did seem like a lot of fun. And I've heard stories over the years about you being on the set of the Harry Potter films. I remember hearing a story once that the original Dumbledore, Richard Harris, couldn't quite remember his lines, and that you said that you actually went in there and asked him to help you run yours, so that he could practice his without you asking him.
Yeah, I was an incredibly politic little child, as it turned out. I do remember that. I also, one of my other, like, amazing memories of Richard, in the second film, there's Forked Phoenix is there, and it was animatronically operated from guys that were outside the set, and they had a camera, like, in the head of the Phoenix so they could, like, see what people were doing right in front of it so they could interact with it. And Richard 100% thought it was real.
So wait a minute. So this is the magical golden phoenix that Dumbledore has as a pet. And he actually thought that they had found a phoenix of some kind.
he was like going up to it, and of course, as soon as he started like interacting with it, and the guys outside like realized this was happening, they started like pandering to it and playing with it more and more, and it was lovely. It was just one of those great moments. But no, he was a lovely, lovely man.
One thing I've always wondered. Again, I've seen all of those films many, many times with my family. They made the first film, I guess, going back, they cast it back in like 2000, I guess it was, or maybe even earlier. And they cast you and the other then children in the lead roles and many of the supporting roles. And pretty much all of you made it to the final film. And you all did a wonderful job. But none of you went nuts, flamed out, started behaving badly in public places. As far as I know, none of you were seen getting out of a limousine without underwear during the entire decade. Just probability would indicate that's extremely unlikely.
Well, I mean, you think that, but there are also loads of kind of successful cases of people who start young becoming, you know, like Elijah Wood and Tobey Maguire and Jodie Foster and, you know, I mean, I can't think of more.
That's it. It's you guys, those four. Everybody else is like...
But I think for all of us, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but like, there was never a moment when I didn't want to be there. And I'm just lucky that I really, really like my job.
I apparently. We have to ask about this because you blew up the internet with your rendition of Alphabet Aerobics, the rap thing by Blackalicious.
Yeah.
You did it on The Tonight Show this week. And people were amazed. Is this like, I mean, are you going to do like the Bruce Willis thing and go from acting into music now?
Did Bruce Willis do that?
Oh, you are young. No, he did. He tried, I think it was called like The Return of Bruno, I think his album was called.
Wow, that's a great album name.
Yes, isn't it though?
I'm going to get that immediately.
Yo, I think you should.
I think the website's available.
But no, I can officially like shut down any idea that I am. This is not me sort of auditioning for my changing career. This is just a weird thing that I can do.
I'm telling you, this could work out for you with this acting thing in the end. Well, Daniel Radcliffe, what a pleasure to talk to you in person. But we have invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
Sure, you're Harry Potter, but what do you know about Harry Pottery?
Oh, dear.
Harry Pottery. In other words, chia pets. Those strange little planters that grow chia leaves, looking amusingly like hair. We're going to ask you three questions about chia pets, and if you get two right, you win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl Castle's voice in their voicemail. Bill, who is Daniel Radcliffe playing for?
Abhijit Lakia of Panjim, India.
That's interesting. It'll be far enough away so that if you screw this up, you probably won't run into her.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Right. Here we go. Here's your first question. Now, you know what these chia pets are. These are these little terracotta-colored pottery that you get, and you sort of smear...
with the green thing sprouting out
of it. Exactly. That's all you need to know.
It's like a Bruce Willis with more hair.
It is very much like that. All right, so that's all you need to know as we proceed to the first question. Chia pets come in many shapes and models, including special holiday editions. You could, if you wanted, buy which of these? A chia zombie for Halloween, B, a chia John Hancock for the 4th of July, or C, a chia dead firstborn son for Passover.
Oh, I mean, they'd all be good.
Wouldn't they?
I'm gonna go with A, because that seems the most likely.
The chia zombie. The audience agrees, and you are right. It is, in fact.
Yes.
What it is, it's like a little zombie arm emerging from a chia lawn. You can pick that up for your shelf.
That's pretty nice. I'm gonna go and find some chia pets. Up.
Probably. We're making a shopping list. Chia pets.
I'm gonna have an evening of Bruce Willis music and chia pets.
There you are. And that's the life we always imagined you living, I have to say. All right, you have two more chances. Let's go. Sometimes chia fans create their own chia pets to honor certain people they may admire, including which of these? A, Liberace, B, billionaire investor Warren Buffett, or C, Saddam Hussein?
This is tricky, but I'm sorry, I don't know how that noise sounded. Fine, by the way. I like the idea of a Warren Buffett chia pet. Please tell me that's true.
I can't do that, Daniel. As much as I admire you, it's Saddam Hussein. The Saddam Hussein chia was allegedly marketed under the name Chia Thug. When the plants grew in, it looked like Saddam Hussein's hair and beard. Nobody has been able to find one outside of a photograph of the box, so it may not be real, but we can hope so. All right. This is exciting. You have one more chance to get this right and win our prize for our listener. Joseph Enterprises is the company that makes Chia Pets, always has. It's also responsible for other as-seen-on-TV products you can purchase for your home, including which of these? A, mandals, which are candles for men. They come in scents like fresh fish, kegger, and auto shop. Or B, the literal insanity workout DVDs, an exercise series led by the inmates at the Danvers State Hospital. Or C, the Shamu Wow, a super absorbent towel to clean your marine mammals.
Oh, what? One of them is real?
Yes, mandals.
Okay, I'm gonna go with the candles one, the ridiculous candles.
You're gonna go with mandals? You're right, Daniel. Very good. You can buy mandals, some other flavors or scents that mandals come in. Swimsuit model, what does that smell like? Space cake and stripper's mouth. That's minty fresh breath, because, as I'm sure you know, strippers are minty fresh breath. Bill Curtis, how did Daniel Radcliffe do in our quiz?
Enough to win 2 out of 3. Yeah.
That's great. Nobody expected anything less from you, Daniel. Daniel Radcliffe is a star of stage and screen. Daniel Radcliffe, thank you so much for joining
Thank
us on Wait,
much.
Wait, Don't Tell Me. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Coming up, two people who were the hottest teen stars just a few mere decades ago, Rob Lowe and Brooke Shields. We'll be back with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mail carrier picks it up. No more wasting time going to that post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this very podcast can use the promo code WAIT, W-A-I-T, for a special offer. A no-risk trial plus a digital scale and free postage. So go over to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in W-A-I-T, WAIT. That's Stamps.com, and enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. You are the best. So this week, we're basically luring in the youth with candy and carnival games. All hour, it's just the things and the people kids love or loved many years ago.
For example, Brooke Shields, the actress and model, has been world famous since she was a little girl. We talked to her in 2012, just as she was opening a play in Los Angeles. And Peter started with the obvious question. How come she's not crazy?
I wonder if I'm just very deeply disturbed on a different level of crazy. It's schmaltzy as an answer, but I have a really... I never moved out to California. I never moved to Hollywood, and I went to regular non-professional schools and never worked during the school year, except for after school. So I think that had a huge effect on just the way I grew up. You know, I sort of had these jobs that I would do, and they were, but at the, there was a sense of normalcy.
So you were like going to high school. You went to high school in Englewood, New Jersey.
I did.
And then you'd like, after school, you'd say, oh, I need to go and be photographed for these incredibly influential and famous Calvin Klein ads. I'll see you guys later for study group.
It was just like that. And what a lot of the time my mom would say, look, let's bring, you know, who do you want to bring today? And I'd bring one of my best friends or, you know, one of my high school buddies, and we would, you know, just, we made it fun.
What I'm basically being led to understand is that you were Hannah Montana. Like high school girl by day, spectacular superstar by night.
Exactly. Then I went on to play her mother in the show, and it's full circle.
Isn't that weird?
Did you go to prom?
I didn't get asked out, but
what?
I recruited.
I would like to retroactively ask you to your prom.
I'm building a time machine right now. Stay where you are.
I was in high school in New Jersey at the same time. I actually could have helped you out.
I know.
Damn
what
it.
Was your reason?
And don't be thrown off by his voice. He's actually very handsome.
So you did those famous Calvin Klein ads. Did you get lots of Calvin Klein jeans? And did anything?
I did. And you know what the funny thing is? What? I found two pairs that my mother had saved from the actual commercial, and I got them on.
Hey!
Pretty. Let me tell you, it was about 20 minutes.
Hey!
But
good for you.
But I gave one to the Met, and they asked me because they were doing a retrospective of all of Calvin's work, and they were so high. They were high waisted. They were very. It was funny how not fashionable they were.
Yeah. The thing that you're doing right now is very cool. You're in a stage production in L.A.
I am.
This is The Exorcist.
I am. It is the world premiere of the play, which is taken from the book. And it's Richard Chamberlain plays Marin, Father Marin. And John Doyle, who directed the last Sweeney Todd on Broadway and won a Tony for it, he is the director. And it is an hour and a half long, and it is a very stylized, abstract, beautiful stage production.
Yeah, but when does somebody vomit pea soup?
Oh, it's all suggested, but there's nothing, you don't see a thing. Like, there's no real vomiting, there's just sound effects.
Brooke, that's not going to sell tickets.
No.
Just tell them there's a lot of vomit.
There's some sodomy. Does that work?
Sure.
Is it true that you auditioned for the movie way back when?
No, I didn't. I had auditioned for Audrey Rose.
Well, that was that other satanic little girl.
Which
movie.
Is the other one. And they said I looked too, like my hair was down, and they said I didn't look cute enough. I looked too mature or something. It was like some, Robert Wise was directing it, obviously, then. And but they went straight to Linda Blair.
Oh, well, good
what
for
are you going to do?
Where's she now?
She's doing a play version of those Calvin Klein ads.
I was going to say. Linda Blair. She's doing the horror version. I'm
trying to imagine Linda Blair.
Blue Lagoon.
Yeah, exactly.
50-year-old woman.
Blue Lagoon, the play.
She's doing Blue Lagoon. Oh, my God. Blue Lagoon, 40 years later.
Those two. How do we get out of this place?
But I think we should do it as our ages now.
Really?
Just be like bitter, old.
Oh, no, let's start.
Yeah, that's so, your life. What's your problem with that?
Yeah, I think like by now the magic would be over, right? What are you looking at? I hate the way you chew. Put some clothes on. Coconuts again?
No,
I'm
wait.
Drown myself in this lagoon.
Yeah.
Brooke Shields, we have asked you to play a game we're calling...
Okay, what about these Calvins?
So, you were 16 when you said that nothing comes between you and your Calvins. Well, we saw the ads, we believe you. But we're betting you weren't as close to some other Calvins. Answer these three questions, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Brooke Shields playing for?
Brooke is playing for Katya Volker of Washington, D.C.
All right, ready to play?
Okay.
Here's your first question. The most famous Calvin we know of was John Calvin, founder of Calvinism. He was an influential French-Swiss preacher of the 16th century. Father Calvin lived a virtuous life but came to a bad end. How did he go? A, he went for a swim, even though he didn't know how, because, quote, he said it wasn't his predestiny to drown. B, he preached so hard he blew himself up. Or C, for Lent, he gave up food.
Which one of those is true?
Yes. One of them is.
I think he drowned.
You think he drowned? That's your choice?
Sure.
No, actually, it was B. He strained himself so much preaching, it killed him.
Wow.
Yeah. Next question. We all remember Calvin and Hobbes, that great comic strip by Bill Watterson. Well, Watterson proved his artistic genius in college by doing what? Painting a copy of the Sistine Chapel onto the ceiling of his dorm room. B, providing custom lettering on the chests of naked football fans. Or C, making a series of paintings with nothing but spilled beer from his frat house.
I'm gonna wish that he painted on football players' chests.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he like the guy from Calvin and Hobbes like say no, just sit still for 10 more minutes. I'll get this right. Well, I'm afraid that's not correct. No, the answer was that he painted the Sistine Chapel into the ceiling of his dorm room.
Wow.
Had a scaffold and everything. Yeah. We have one last question.
Okay.
Let's even get this one. Calvin Broadus, of course, became Snoop Dogg. Remember him?
Yeah.
You know him, but not everybody can get that name right. Among them was Senator Alan Simpson, who referred to him once as what? A, Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog. B, the D.O. Double Guzzle. Or C, that black man with the hair and the rapidy rapidy.
Just because that black man with the hair and the rapidy rapidy is so wrong that I'm just going to pick that one.
At this point, why not?
Why not?
No, it was Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog, said Senator Simpson. Quite famously.
Well, I'm 3 for 3.
There you are. Carl, how did Brooke Shields do in her quiz?
Well, she had no correct answers. So, no prize for Katya Volker.
Brooke Shields, thank you so much for joining us at WaitWait.com.
The next interview we'll revisit is with a special guest famous for being very, very easy on the eyes. And, of course, for a notorious sex tape.
We're talking, of course, about Rob Lowe. The actor slash dreamboat joined us in 2014. And, of course, I asked him about one of the rumors swirling around him that he used to look for women to date on C-SPAN.
No, it wasn't C-SPAN, it was MTV.
Well, that makes more sense.
I wasn't necessarily looking for Mensa members at that point in my life.
But you're beautiful. Why you got to do that? I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, we control MTV all day long.
Yeah.
It ain't going nowhere, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, if I saw an interesting-looking girl on the latest, Police video or Kaja Gugu extravaganza. I'll take Girl in Black Dress, third one to the right. Whatever.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
And did this work for you? Did you call them up? This, hello, I'm Rob Lowe, and I would like to go out with you. And they'd all say yes.
In all truth, I only did it once, and it did work. And I ended up dating that particular young lady for about a year.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
I had quite good luck with it, and maybe should have gone back to it, but never did.
So the C-SPAN thing was just a terrible rumor because I was excited about this.
Yes, I did at one point watch Fawn Hall testify in the Iran-Contra hearings, and I tracked her down. That's true.
Nice.
Did you really?
Yes, it's true.
So the rest of America was like looking at the Iran-Contra hearings and going, oh, what a terrible extra-constitutional potential crime against this country. And you're like, so she hid it in her underwear, did she? We need to, and you probably have gone through this before recently, but you recently said something that got picked up about how hard it is for attractive people in Hollywood.
Yes, it's a condition that affects worldwide at least 15 or 20 people a year.
I know.
Then it takes an entertainer and slash journalist of your stature to bring this out of the shadows. So first of all, thank you.
This is NPR. We tell the sad stories. I want to give you a chance to be serious if you want to. I mean, did you find, because let's face it, you're a good-looking fellow, that you weren't considered for certain roles that you might have wanted?
No, I think what it is that there is a certain irony when, I will have finished coaching my kids' sixth grade basketball team at the Y, and a studio executive will say, this movie we're making about a sixth grade basketball parent, nobody would look like you, so no. And that's you go, wait a minute, I actually am in the PTA. Well, what do you mean, PTA dads don't look like me? I'm a PTA dad, so.
Rob, what time are your PTA meetings? But it's like where, when?
You're welcome anytime. You're welcome to come by.
All right, I'll just swing by.
One of the things I have admired, especially recently, is that you've played roles to, let's say, go against type or play up the type for laughs. You're hilarious and funny and charming in Parks and Rec.
Thanks.
And your role in Behind the Candelabra was scary. But I want to ask, were there roles, when you were absolutely the leading man pigeonhole that you would have loved to play? Some unattractive roles, like, for example, Sloth from The Goonies. Is that a role you would have wanted to do? The kid from Mask, that would have been awesome for you.
Don't laugh. I auditioned for the kid from Mask, and they're like, go out into the lobby and put on this stocking cap and cut it eye holes and come back in. I had to wear literally, the Unknown Comic bag over my head when I auditioned for that movie. It's an absolutely true story.
That's amazing. So you have a new book out, which I enjoyed. It's called Love Life.
Yes.
You tell this story. You talk about how you did this show called Lion's Den. It was supposed to be your big follow-up to West Wing, I think.
Yes.
And you played this lawyer in this law firm, and the show didn't go well for a variety of reasons. And they canceled it, but they allowed you guys to finish shooting the season so they could sell it on DVD, right?
Yeah, so the show is canceled. It's not on the air. It's over.
Right.
But they say to me, you're still going to make 13 more episodes, but nobody's ever going to see them. Maybe we'll release them on DVD in, like, Bratislava.
Right.
So with that as the backdrop, the writers and I decide, you know what? To hell with it. We're going to burn the bridges. We're going for it. And so we decided to write my character as a sociopathic maniac who is revealed to be a mass murderer. And Kyle Chandler, right before Friday Night Lights, is the mentor in the office who is always my rival. He comes in one night while I'm eating in the executive dining room and confronts me on evidence that I might be a mass murderer. I walk up, stab him to death with my steak knife, sit back down, eat my steak, wipe my mouth, go to the balcony, and throw myself off. That's the end of the series.
You know, even though I had read that story in your book, a tear came to my eye. That's so moving.
And this is how little the studio and the network cared about the show. When we told them we were going to write that, they were like, that sounds great.
Well, Rob Lowe, it is a delight to talk to you, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Welcome to the Brat Pack.
You were famously a part of Hollywood's Brat Pack in the 80s, but what do you know about brats? That is, bratwurst, the famous sausage that often comes in packs of six. We're going to ask you three questions about bratwurst. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Rob Lowe playing for?
He's playing for Lily Alba of San Diego, California.
All right, you ready to play?
Absolutely.
There are many types of bratwurst available for your very own sausage fest, including which of these: A, human flesh taste bratwurst, B, gummy worm bratwurst, or C, wood pulp bratwurst?
I'm going with wood pulp bratwurst.
Wood pulp bratwurst. Sounds good, but it's gummy worm bratwurst. And it's just what it sounds like. You get bratwurst with gummy worms in it. I don't know why people want this, but they do.
That is disgusting.
It is. Now, if you're a real bratwurst fan, you can go to the Bratwurst Museum in Germany. Mm-hmm. Thuringer, of course, where you can enjoy what attraction at the Bratwurst Museum? A, the Bratwurst Hall of Kings, where they have bratwursts carved to look like every ruling prince of Germany. B, the Bratwurst Theater, where you can enjoy a bratwurst-centered romantic comedy. Or C, the gift shop, where you can get all your purchases wrapped in a pig intestine just like bratwurst.
I'm going to go with the Hall of Kings.
The Hall of Kings. With the ruling princes, the Hohenhausern done up as carved bratwurst.
Yeah, I like that. That's intriguing to me.
You ever tried to carve a bratwurst?
I bet he has.
I'm sticking with kings. I'm intrigued. I'd actually fly to Germany to visit a display of totems resembling kings made of bratwurst.
I like your spirit and I like your bravery, but I wish I could like your answer. It's the Bratwurst Theater.
Ah.
According to the Google translation of the museum's website, it is, quote, authentic, unique, fascinating sausage theater must have seen.
Oh, so that's what they're calling it.
Yes. Last question. Bratwursts have been known to show up in the police blotter, as when which of these happened? A, armed robbers stole a truck of bratwursts in Janesville, Wisconsin, only to be found lolling around semi-conscious a day later around a greasy barbecue. B, a Des Moines woman was arrested for attacking another woman with a cooked bratwurst as a weapon. Or C, police in Columbus broke up an underground bratwurst ring selling non-USDA-approved pirate sausages.
Listen, anytime the phrase pirate sausage is used...
Oh, yes. I like your choices, but in fact it was the Des Moines woman who was attacked. She attacked her friend with a bratwurst. She was arrested. They took the victim's greasy, stained blouse as evidence. Carl, how did Rob Lowe do in our quiz?
Rather lousy, Peter.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rob. No correct answers.
Sorry, I let everyone down. I cannot tell you how demoralizing this is.
Rob Lowe's autobiography, Love Life, is out now. Rob Lowe, thank you so much for being on our show. What a pleasure to talk to you. It's the sweetheart of the 80s and the soundtrack of the 90s, Molly Ringwald and Lance Bass. We'll be back with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you guys so much. This is the week we try to appeal to younger listeners by bringing them, you know, young guests. But since we don't know any actual young people, the best we can do is people who used to be young.
Molly Ringwald was the most famous teenager of the 1980s. She starred as a kind of every girl in classic films like The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles.
When she joined us in 2010, I asked her what it was like to be part of the group of young Hollywood actors known as the Brat Pack, and you know, whether they hung out together.
Not really, no. It was really just a term that was coined, you know, by this New York Magazine writer. We weren't really hanging out. I mean, I was quite a bit younger. I was, like, the only one that was really the age that I was playing, and most everybody else was already in their 20s. So, there wasn't really a lot of hanging out going on my part, at least.
Really?
I was sort of home doing homework.
It turns out that you were young, partially because you got your start as a performer quite young, right?
Yes, I did.
And we didn't know this about you, but you are and were at the time a singer. In fact, we have, this is a piece of tape, this is the vocal stylings of Molly Ringwald.
Oh, boy.
Come along, get your partner, wear your brand, brand new gown, for there's gonna be a party in
wow.
Good old town, where you know where.
First of all, I have to ask, that's you, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, according you were six.
I was a six-year-old chanteuse with my father's jazz band.
Oh, wow.
Jazz band.
And, yeah. And how did, so your father was a jazz musician. Is that how it came about? That he?
Yes, and he still is a jazz musician. Yeah, I started performing him when I was 3 and a half and recorded my first album when I was six.
And wow.
That was my deep, dark past before all the John Hughes movies.
Now, do a lot of people that knew of your performances when you were six, are they surprised to see that you're older now?
That's a great question.
I mean, you really are. If I were to ask somebody to list things that, like, saved the 80s to them, they would probably say, okay, Ronald Reagan, Olivia Newton-John, Molly Ringwald. You are, like, hugely iconic of that decade. Does that ever get tired?
You know, I guess so. You know, in a way, I don't really consider myself so much a part of the 80s any more than any other person. You know, I mean, it's just a decade that I lived through.
I'm sorry, I hate to disagree with a guest, but no, that is not true.
No, I'm saying that's from my point of view.
Right, okay.
I'm not living in the 80s in any way. I don't really have any association with it other than the fact that I was younger and that's what I was doing. That's what I happened to have been doing when I was a teenager.
I was just wondering if there's any other decade you'd rather be associated with.
No, I think 80s is a pretty cool one.
I
was just talking to my co-star of Secret Life, Shailene, who's a teenager now, and she says, do you think that people are going to look back in our time and want to, like, dress the way that we are? And I said, well, yeah, of course. And she's like, but, I mean, we don't have any style now. I mean, like, in the 80s, you were, like, doing something. I said, well, that's just the way that it seems now because we're in the middle of this decade. But obviously, it's going to be vintage one day, like everything else.
The covered wagon people used to say that as well. So, do you think anybody will want to wear a bustle and a snood?
Drive around on the Great Plains.
We have one more question for you before we go to the game. What we do before our guest comes on is we announce on our Twitter feed, which is Wait, Wait, just one word, what people might want to ask our guest this week. And this was one of the questions, and we have to ask it. It's a particular, I guess, peril of your fame. How often do creepy dudes who have seen 16 Candles ask you if they can have your underwear?
More times than I would care to count.
There you go. It's the burden of fame and success, I'm afraid.
Yeah. It's actually that one thing that has prevented me from showing the movie to my six-year-old. It's really close.
Well, Molly Ringwald, we're so delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
The Robert C. Byrd Memorial Not My Job Quiz.
Oh, boy.
Since the late Senator Byrd, who passed at the age of 92, liked to name things after himself, who are we to argue? We're going to ask you three questions about the remarkable life and career of Senator Robert Byrd. If you get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Molly Ringwald playing for?
Molly is playing for Alex Stoja from Montreal.
All right. Ready to play, Molly?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Now, you know, Senator Byrd loved to make speeches on the Senate floor, his most memorable one probably being the one he made in opposition to the Iraq War. However, he once took to the floor of the Senate to protest what? A, the cancellation of the TV series Gunsmoke. B, the removal of spittoons from the bars of West Virginia. Or C, the use of electrical amplification at a nitty-gritty dirt band concert.
I'll go with the spittoons.
The spittoons. He protested the removal of spittoons, you think?
Yeah.
No, it was actually he protested the cancellation of Gunsmoke. He really liked Gunsmoke. What can I tell you?
Okay.
That's all right. You still got two more to go. You can still get this. To thank their benefactor, the people of West Virginia erected a statue of him in the rotunda of their state capital. Local lore has it that the statue was arranged in such a way that what? A, at 5 p.m., his shadow intersects with another to make a dollar sign. B, if you stand beneath it, his hands point at your pockets. Or C, when the wind blows around it in a particular way, it whistles ka-ching. You're going to go for the, if you stand beneath it, his hands point at your pockets.
Yeah.
You're right. That's what it does.
Wow.
His hands are pointing directly into your pockets, whence he derived so much. All right. Last question. As you say, Molly, if you get this one right, you win it all. Like we said, he was honored in his home state for the billions he brought there in federal aid and investment. Among other things, he got the federal government to pay for what in West Virginia? A, an $18 million bridge that goes over a culvert 3 feet deep. B, a Coast Guard station in a state that's 100 miles inland. Or C, a $40 million museum and research center devoted to the music made with a bent saw. You know, boing, that kind of thing.
All right, I guess I'll go with the Coast Guard.
You're going to go with the Coast Guard station?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what it is. The Coast Guard National Maritime Center is in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and it oversees mariners who are using the port of New Orleans. Why is it in West Virginia, then? Well, somewhere Robert Byrd is smiling about that. Carl, how did Molly Ringwald do in our quiz?
Molly had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Alex Stoja. Congratulations, Molly.
Well Yay! Done. Molly Ringwald is an accomplished actress. She is also the author of the book Getting the Pretty Back. It's in your bookstores now. Molly Ringwald, thank you so much for being with us.
Bye, Molly.
And thanks for all the great work. Bye-bye, Molly.
In 2015, we went to Orlando, Florida, which, of course, is famous for one thing and one thing only, growing boy bands in tanks of nutrients.
We talked to Lance Bass. He was a member, of course, of NSYNC, and we asked him about what it was like growing up being groomed from an infant for nothing but stardom.
Well, I wish it was that easy, and no, I was a very gawky-looking teenager, so I was not cute. I was living in Mississippi, and I knew Justin through a vocal coach, so when they were looking for the bass singer for the
Hold
group...
Hold on, wait a minute. Justin. You guys have ever heard of anybody named Justin associated with this?
Yeah, he's trying to make it big. One day he'll. Well,
let him dream. I don't know if he'll ever hit any higher than he did with you, but go on.
I know. It's sad to watch. It really, really is. It was nuts because, you know, when we first started, a year after we were together in Orlando, we got signed to Munich, Germany. So we're actually a German band.
What? First, wait a minute. Yeah. You are a German band?
We are a German band, yeah. Yes. And, you know, I mean, the Beatles got their start in Germany, too.
So I guess so, yeah.
You know, the first 2 years were so surreal to us because, you know, we were, it felt like you were the Beatles. I mean, there were thousands of people just chasing you everywhere, and then we'd come back to Orlando, and you couldn't even get arrested at the mall.
Of course, after the band broke up, you came out with a really surprising kind of revelation for people who had followed you, that you wanted to be an astronaut. And so you actually, I mean, this was not like a lark when you signed up for the, I guess they call it the Space Tourist Program in Russia. You learned Russian, right?
Yeah, I did. Я говорю по-русски.
Because the idea was you can't just be a tourist on one of these space trips. You have to be ready to fly the spacecraft, do the emergency procedures in case something goes wrong, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not a tourist thing at all. You're a legit cosmonaut, and you're in charge of a lot of things. I mean, I was in charge of all of our oxygen on board, you know, so, you know, I could at any moment kill everyone on board.
So you had been a part of this hugely successful musical act that involved a lot of synchronization and teamwork. Did those skills as a boy band member help you as a cosmonaut?
Actually, it really did help me a lot. It's just the discipline that we had to have to be in a group like that, and the training that we had to go through to be able to perform like that and sing live. And, yeah, it kept me very grounded.
As it were. You guys, and I hadn't remembered this until I looked it up, you guys did the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah.
Did you watch it this year with that amazing technological stuff that Katy Perry had? And you were like, hell, we didn't need any giant lion puppet. We just went out there and the special effect was our talent. Am I right, honey?
Hey, we had a blast. I mean, Super Bowl halftime show is, you know, the ultimate for any performer. And I was living a dream.
Oh, my gosh.
But I would have loved to have had Left Shark there, too.
The Left Shark. I think next year's Super Bowl is just going to be Left Shark doing a solo acoustic show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be 15
right
minutes.
Now, I'm calling Left Shark for Halloween. No one can steal that out.
Well, Lance Bass, what a pleasure to talk to you. We've asked you here this time to play a game. We're calling...
It's all about the bass. About the bass.
Yeah.
No trouble.
So you're Lance Bass. But what do you know about bass? I mean, the fish, probably not a lot, unless you were named for the fish, which would be weird because it's your last name. So we're going to ask you three questions about bass and bass fishing. Get two right, you win our prize for one of our listeners. Bill, who is Lance Bass playing for?
Sky Joyner from Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
All right, Lance, here's your first question. Cheating is a big problem in professional bass fishing tournaments. It's a huge problem, in fact.
True.
To try to... Oh, you might... Oh. Please tell me that you, Lance Bass, have entered a bass fishing tournament.
I have not officially entered a bass fishing tournament, but growing up in Mississippi, yes, I fish a lot. I was either going to be a bass singer or a bass fisherman, so...
There you are. To try to prevent cheating, bass fishing tournaments routinely do what? A, give all winners polygraph tests right there in the dock. B, test to make sure each competitor's urine is at least 30% Miller Lite. Or C, they hire scuba divers to follow each boat around and actually watch the fish get hooked.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess I'm going to have to go with C, scuba divers.
They're going to be like scuba divers following the boats.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty aggressive, but yeah, why not?
That would be. Sadly, the boats go upwards of 60 miles an hour, so they'd have to be really good scuba divers. The answer was polygraph tests. They actually, at many bass fishing tournaments, hook the guys up. Did you catch that fish? Yes, sir. That's what they do. Okay, Lance, here's your next question. Now, the way you cheat in a bass fishing tournament is you stash a live fish in your boat or in the water and then pretend you've caught it. But one cheater at a tournament in the UK was caught when what happened? A, he forgot to take the bass out of the supermarket packaging. B, spectators recognized the fish from seeing it at a nearby aquarium. Or C, he presented it to the judges in the form of fish sticks.
Wow. I guess I will go for A.
So you think that a guy, usually guys competing in a professional bass fishing tournament, says, here's the fish I just caught from this lake, and one of them is in a styrofoam tray wrapped in cling wrap. So no, you're really going to go, because we offer you the choice of the supermarket packaging, B, recognize it from the aquarium, or C, fish sticks.
All right, B just sounds way better now.
You're right, it's B. So yeah, somebody had just been to the aquarium and they said, that fish looks familiar.
I say.
And they called the aquarium and they said, are you missing a bass? And they said, well, as a matter of fact, we are. And thus the guy was caught. All right. Here we go. The last question for you is about Big Mouth Billy Bass. That was the singing mechanical fish that was all the rage a decade ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was not just a novelty, though, as proved by which of these? A, in Venezuela, it's being used to teach English. B, it stopped a home invasion robbery in Minnesota after the intruder was scared off by its rendition of Take Me to the River. Or C, the newest version is entirely edible, an innovation after several unfortunate incidents with the first edition.
I know this one. It's B, it scared away an intruder.
You're right, Liz.
Very good.
Guy broke into the house. All of a sudden, he heard somebody singing. He turned and fled. It was just Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Right.
Bill, how did Lance Bass do in our quiz?
He got 2 out of 3, and that's a win for Lance.
All right.
Congratulations. So Lance Bass is a former but forever teen heartthrob, but he's also the host of the show Dirty Pop on Sirius XM Radio. And if you want to see how he's doing, check out his new music video. It's called Walking on Air. Lance Bass, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Bye-bye. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Miles Dernboss with technical direction from Lorna White, our CFO, is Andy Anna. Production coordinator is Mr. Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Thanks to all the panelists, our guests, our listener contestants, Mr. Bill Curtis, and of course, our scorekeeper, Emeritus Carl Castle, still our only prize. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week with an all-new version of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This is NPR.